Welcome to Pop Culture Man Children PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. Thanks once again for tuning in and listening. On today's show, we have a returning guest, Mr. Anthony Bongiorno.
Hello.
My last name is also Bongiorno.
That's a coincidence.
I know. But you do look familiar to me.
I feel like we've met before.
Yeah. You are a high school teacher and an adjunct instructor.
Yes.
Of English at the college level.
Yes.
Well, you've actually been on before, and we're related. We are brothers.
What?
People say we look alike. I don't think so.
I don't think so either, but I do think we sound alike, which may be confusing for all the listeners at home.
Well, they're just going to have to deal with that. So this is Pop Culture Man Children. I'm Mike Bongiorno. You can listen to PCMC anywhere podcasts are available. That's Stitcher, Apple Music, what else?
Spotify,
and one more, Google Play, which I don't know anybody.
I've never used Google Play. No, neither have I.
But we're there. Those are the big four. So how have you been, Anthony?
I've been great, although we're entering into the winter doldrums.
Yeah.
It's January.
Mm-hmm.
It's cold. It's bleak.
It's not that cold, though. It's been not so bad lately.
I just feel like this is the time of the year where
depression really settles
in. Yeah, it really settles really in for settles a nice in, long stay.
It really settles into your bones at this part of the year.
Because Christmas is over.
Yeah.
New Year's is always kind of a bust.
Yeah.
And now it's just bleak and there's nothing until spring really exciting.
And for some reason, everyone always thinks of Christmas as like the middle of the winter, but it's not at all.
Literally 4 days after winter starts.
Right. The winter is so much. There's so much more horrible winter.
I think February and March are probably my least favorite months. Because February is like, you only have 28 days. You're not even really a month.
Yeah.
And March, sometimes 29, what?
Yeah.
And March, I feel like in my head, I always think March is spring. But then
it's not.
It's never spring. It's always snowing in March. Yeah.
I always think of Homer Simpson with the misspelled calendar going lousy smarch weather.
Yeah.
Yeah. Smarch is the worst.
Yeah, it is. It sucks.
So the year's just begun, but there's already so much pop culture news. First of all, insanely, on Wednesday, January 2nd, three D-list celebrities died.
Yes, I saw that.
And they were all the exact same age.
I didn't know they were all the same age.
We're talking about Mean Gene Okerlund. We're talking about Bob Einstein, also known as Marty Funkhauser Leary. And Super Dave. And then, of course, Captain from Captain and Tennille.
Yeah, that was the roughest for me.
They all died January 2nd, and they were all 76 years old.
Any same birthdays or?
Oh, no, I don't know. I do believe that they are three of the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
Well, you know, the celebrity deaths come in threes,
yeah,
usually.
Yeah, and the D-list celebrity deaths.
Yeah.
Mean Gene, I mean, I'm sure, like, Emilio has a lot to say about Mean Gene.
Yeah, Emilio has taken the day off.
Yeah, he was super affected by it. For me, and I think for a lot of America, when you think of Mean Gene, the thing you think of most is other wrestlers saying his name.
Yeah,
like, let me tell you something, Mean Gene. Yeah. You know, you don't think so much of
He's
him.
He's just a
speaking.
Sounding board for every other personality.
Yeah. Because that's what he was. He was an announcer for a not real sport.
Has his funeral already happened?
No.
Because it'd be great if just he has like an open casket and all the wrestlers come up to it and they're like, let me tell you something, Mean Gene. I'm going to miss you. Like, you have no idea.
And now The Undertaker. And it's The Undertaker.
Oh.
It's just.
That was a good one.
It's all just.
It's all make-believe.
It should be sticky.
I don't watch wrestling, but whenever I do, I always am like, oh, this is campy fun. It's high theater.
Well, you find more in it than I always want to like it more than I do. Bob Einstein. Did you know Bob Einstein is the brother of Albert Brooks?
I thought you were going to say of Albert Einstein.
No, Albert Brooks is named Albert Einstein, and he changed his name to Albert Brooks. Albert
Brooks,
the comedian, the filmmaker. Comedian. Yeah.
I did not know that. Older?
Oh, I don't know. But Albert Brooks changed his name so he wasn't called Albert Einstein.
I always thought it was Bob Einstein.
No, it's Bob Einstein. Huh. Larry, your cunt is in the... What is it? Your cunt's in the sink.
I'm
really upset because Funkhauser has become my favorite character on that show, and it's coming back for another season.
He had a great dead-eyed stare, probably because of the work.
Yeah, yeah.
But
he
had a great, like, he would just stare you down. I like to go running.
One of my favorite Curb episodes is the one with the Ida Funkhauser memorial.
Yeah.
When Larry takes the flowers.
I don't remember that one.
It's a good one. There are a lot of good Funkhauser episodes, actually, if you go
back.
Yeah,
the extended Funkhauser family, like his nephew.
Yeah, his nephew died in the last season. And then his wife, who he divorced. And then you remember he started dating Elizabeth Perkins, and that was the water, remember?
Yeah.
She was like, oh, Funkhauser likes my water. And then he finally broke and was like, it's terrible.
He's great. Well, we're going to miss him. He was 76. And I don't know anything about Captain from Captain.
No, I don't know anything. I know Love Will Keep Them Together.
Is that the big hit? Was that the hit?
I think so, yeah.
Because I was even trying to think, like, oh, Muskrat Love. But I feel like I know that as a reference.
I don't know
and
Muskrat
not,
Love.
I know that as a reference that, like, you'd hear on Mystery Science Theater 3000. But I don't know the song Muskrat Love.
I know Love Will Keep Us Together from the movie House Arrest with Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
And Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Well, that's part of the... There was a... When you started to get more... When divorces became more like mainstream, you saw like a lot of films in the 90s that were basically about like, don't ever let your parents get divorced because it's wrong and evil.
Yeah.
And you should lock them up. Probably those kids are going to go to jail for life.
Sent a bad message.
Yeah. I guess it goes all the way back to Parent Trap. Daryl Dragon. Is that a real name? Captain's real name was
yes.
Daryl Dragon. Of Captain Tennille. Again, he was 76.
Now, Tennille.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about her.
I guess they were...
Were they a couple? Or are they a thing? Or just...
Yes, but not anymore.
Divorced?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, not anymore because he's dead.
Yeah. Tony Tennille was her name. Oh. Tony with an I. She was by his side... when he died.
Oh, I did. I remember. I saw a headline that said the captain died in Tennille's arms.
Do you think his last words were love will keep us together?
Yeah, I hope so.
As he was ripped from her?
From the earthly plane.
Well, that's it for deaths. So
this has been the celebrity death segment.
Larry. So what else is going on? So... Are Bird Box memes fake, the internet wonders? So Bird Box came out. I'm sure you heard about it from your aunt.
I haven't seen it, but...
It's not great.
I feel like within 2 days, it became all anyone on the internet was talking about.
Right.
And
right.
Now I'm just that kind of person that now I'm just like, you know, I don't want to watch it.
You're not going to really miss anything.
I feel like at this point, if I watch it, I'm going to be like, oh, this is like okay at best.
It is okay. Look, it's okay. It's goodish.
Is it Hitchcockian or
no.
is it? No. See?
The best part is, and of course, great performance by John Malkovich, who says things like, fuck you, new guy.
Why is it called Bird Box?
Because the monsters that you can't see. One way that you can tell that they're around is birds freak out when they're around. So she's got a box
okay.
that she keeps birds in as a sort of detector for the
this
monsters.
This is Sandy?
Yeah, this is Sandy.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, I feel like I'll watch it eventually.
Well, here's the thing. You're right. It did feel like it came out of nowhere, and that led people to wonder if all of these memes we were seeing on Twitter and Instagram and subsequently Facebook were being distributed by Netflix as a way to drum up popularity. And at least from I'm reading an article here from Mashable, written by Morgan Song.
Mashable. You said that like Christopher Walken.
Yes. Mashable. That's a...
All right.
So, no, Netflix is not making fake teen accounts to spread Bird Box memes.
It's a great idea, though.
This is Morgan Song. I'm sure it's happened, but apparently there is no evidence of it. And one of the kids, like, doesn't even have a lot of followers, and people are like, you're a bot. And the kid was like, I'm not a bot. I'm sorry. I just really enjoyed this movie.
I do love that we're living in the age now where when you go on any post and you go into the comments, there's constantly people accusing other people of being bots.
And Russian spies.
Yeah. What a time to be alive.
I know. It's like the John Mulaney joke about, like, who would have thought we'd live in a day and age where we have to prove that we're not robots? Now it's time for the robot test.
It is great, though, that if anybody disagrees with you on anything, you can be like, nice try, bot.
What an insult. You're not even a real person. You're not,
you don't have a pulse.
Yeah. There's nothing behind this conspiracy theory. These really are just memes. I don't know why they took off.
I think it's just that one image of Sandra Bullock in the... It looks like a rowboat.
With blindfold. The blindfold.
Is just... Something about it is just kind of funny.
Right. Because you could put anything
right
next to it.
Yeah, yeah.
It was... good for... Know who else is in the movie?
Sarah Paulson, right?
Sarah Paulson. And yeah, it was good to see them in a good movie together. Good.
Oh, stop.
It was good to see them...
Ocean's 8 was pretty good.
...in a good movie together.
Whoa. Taking the air right out of that one.
So...
It had its problems. Yeah. So you're saying Bird Box is better than Ocean's 8?
Oh, yeah. Ocean's...
yeah, they're too different, to really.
Bird Box is like, okay...
Hey, it's a Netflix original?
Yeah.
Speaking of, not to take us off topic, but I did watch Dumplin'.
I haven't watched that.
Dumplin' was good.
Really? What is it even about?
It's about a teenager who is plus-sized, and she is the daughter of Jennifer Aniston, who plays a character who was once a teen beauty queen.
Sure.
And basically what happens is... Due to a series of events that I'm not going to get into, the daughter decides to join the pageant that the mother's running.
Uh-huh.
And then at first, you know, it's like a way of getting back at the mother, but then...
Is it funny?
It's pretty funny. It's funny and it's...
Who plays the girl? Is her name Dumplin'? Do they call her Dumplin'?
Jennifer Aniston, her mother calls her Dumplin', but she doesn't like that nickname.
Well, yeah.
But I don't know the actress's name, but she's really good. And then, you know, it's a teen. It's a YA thing, but it was good.
Okay. I enjoy a YA thing.
I was going to say, I enjoy YA things too. So I kind of want to read the book. I feel like I'll probably like that better. But the movie was good. And Jennifer Aniston was good in it. She's got range, I'll tell you.
I don't know why.
Of all those friends.
I don't know. I'll never like her. And I don't know why
that is.
Something about her I'll never like.
I will never, ever like Angelina Jolie. Mm. So I'm not a huge Jennifer Aniston fan, but I feel like I'm always team Aniston.
Oh, you're still fighting that fight?
She is. God bless her. And I just feel like, you know what? Jen was right. It wasn't cool.
I mean, it's not
what,
cool.
What Angelina was saying. And Angelina's a monster, and I'm glad that they've gotten divorced.
She's a monster, really?
For real. I just think she is.
I don't know.
The whole scandal was that she was being interviewed about falling in love with Brad Pitt, and she was like, "Oh, every day coming to work was like it was so romantic, it was magic." And it's
he was married.
Yeah, exactly. And then all Jennifer said was, "It's not cool to talk about that so publicly when you know that he was married to me."
Yeah, that is not cool.
So I'll be on her side forever.
I mean, I'm on her side there. I don't like either of them. Yeah. When it comes to acting,
I don't really like Brad Pitt. Either.
He's not a good actor.
That's like the thing that they do for him.
I love, you ever see the Italian poster for the movie
yep.
12 Years a Slave?
No.
It's just his face.
Oh my God.
Because he's like the one white dude in it evil. And
I did not even know Italy, he was in that movie.
He also produced it.
I didn't know that either.
But I guess, you know, whoever was involved in that decision was a racist, and they were like, yeah. they thought that the Italian public wouldn't see a movie.
Oh my God.
So it's just like, you gotta look, it's just Brad Pitt's
That's
face.
That's so awful.
And then at the very bottom, there's the main dude, Solomon.
Who played the main guy?
Oh.
I haven't seen it, obviously.
You haven't seen it, really?
No. Well, how would I, imagine I saw it, and I was like, I didn't realize Brad Pitt was in it.
No, you definitely know. I actually argue that it breaks the diegesis of the film, because you're watching this sort of harrowing tale of
history. A movie star walks
in.
And
then there's a movie star.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoa!
That's the problem with that level of fame.
You can't really be an
actor. You can't be a character, yeah.
But he can't be a character anyway, because he's not very good at acting.
No. No, not really.
So, all he can be is a face. But anyway, getting back to Netflix and Netflix original movies, this is something interesting that just came out. Sony went to Netflix with Holmes and Watson, and it was like, do you want to buy this?
And they said no.
And Netflix was like, nah. And this is Netflix, which they do some great things, but they also, you know, they fucking, they're
like all those Christmas movies.
They're like a wholesaler of
entertainment. Yeah.
And, you know, they bought, I mean, for instance, they bought the third Cloverfield movie when it looked like no, it wasn't going to be a good idea.
Wasn't that a, didn't they make that a Cloverfield movie after it was already finished?
Yeah. But I think that they also did that to the second one, too. And really? The second one's really good.
God, but they wouldn't take Holmes and Watson, huh?
Even Netflix was like, no, we're above this.
I don't want to see it. It's got, what, 4% on Rotten Tomatoes or something?
Yeah, yeah. Some of the user reviews are funny.
Like ironic?
No, just like, it's just like, it seems like the movie doesn't even have jokes.
Well, that's the thing about Will Ferrell. And, you know, I don't want to be that guy. But I do feel like Will Ferrell is really funny. But we've gotten to this place in his career where they think that they could just
put
roll film and just be like, well, go, you got it. And I don't think he's that funny as an improv guy.
Yeah, you need writing.
Because Anchorman 2 was all of that, and that wasn't good.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, well, I can tell you what. The movie was definitely produced on the one-line pitch. How about John C. Reilly and Will Ferrell as Sherlock Holmes and Watson?
Exactly. And like, it could have been done well if maybe it had a script.
Right, that's the thing. Or maybe it had a script and they just didn't fucking go with it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I was talking about
Will Ferrell. It's a weird one.
I was talking about Will Ferrell the other day to somebody, and we were talking about the DVD Best of SNL, which was like so good because he was so good on that, like the cheerleader or whatever.
Right.
And we were talking about the Get Off the Shed sketch. Yeah. Guys, I'm not going to tell you again. Get Off the Shed. And what makes that funny is he's straight and then he's having this mundane conversation and he turns and starts screaming at the kids, and it's like, he's a good straight man.
Yeah.
Why did we forget that he's the straight man?
Yes. I you know, I know we recently had a bit of a falling out over Elf.
Well, if you want to bring up personal stuff on the podcast without realizing that you didn't like the movie Elf, I got you an Elf t-shirt for Christmas.
I think at one time maybe I did, but I watched it recently. I've shown it to my class a few times over the last few years because they always ask for it. And I just feel like it doesn't hold up. But anyway, I agree. Like, when he's just a character like that for 2 hours, it's not as good as when he's like the guy in Old School who was like the everyday dad type of guy who then like goes crazy. Like,
right,
he's
exactly.
good as like the straight guy who breaks.
Yeah, it's got to be the turn.
Yeah, yeah.
But it looks like, and I've only seen the trailers, but it looks like in Holmes and Watson, he's like, oogity boogity, look at me.
Yeah.
I'm wild and crazy. I'm Sherlock Holmes, but I'm not. And we're supposed to be like, oh, my sides are splitting.
So is John C. Reilly the straight guy?
I think they're both the silly,
so it's like
Step
Brothers, but Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, which I don't like Step Brothers.
I do like Step Brothers.
Some people worship that movie.
I don't worship it, but I do think it's funny. I think if they make a second one, they will let them do whatever they want, and it will be 3.5 hours long and horrible.
I felt like that's what I felt about the first one. I was done with it by the time the title card came up. I was like, oh, I get it.
Yeah, it's kind of like a
they're grown ups acting
joke.
Like children.
Yeah.
Like, it's an SNL sketch that like shouldn't even be a long sketch, and then it just keeps going, and I hated it. And I saw it in the theater and I hated it. And I like Talladega Nights either.
Like, I like the other characters though. I think there's some other good stuff. And the two of them are funny together, I think. But
do you like Talladega Nights?
Yes. I hate Semi Pro.
Oh, I always forget that that's a thing. Well, John C. Reilly's not in that, right?
Right, but a lot of people like just speaking about Will Ferrell, a lot of people like semi-pro a lot, and I've always hated that.
Semi-pro is
basketball.
Him. Oh, what's the one with him?
And oh, the skating one?
Yeah.
That's Blades of Glory.
That's him, that's Napoleon horrible. Dynamite.
Yeah. That's a bad one, too. Will Arnett and Amy Poehler are the villains in that one, which was promising, but it's a bad movie.
No, yeah. Will Ferrell, I think his head... Oh, my God, what's happening? What's happening?
What's the matter?
My chair is...
Oh, you! Oh my God, stop. You're hitting the recliner button.
Where is it?
It's to your right.
Oh, God. Oh, that was terrifying.
Speaking you of recliners... You screamed what's happening as if you had never been on a recliner before.
What is this contraption? It's just doing it on its own, though.
Is this an invention
when yours? I saw, when I saw Spider-Man... Into the Spider-Verse, I saw it in one of those theaters that has shaking seats, like a rumble pack.
4D.
Is that what it is? I don't know.
I think that's what it's called.
It was at an AMC, and I at first I was like, what's going on here? Because I'd never seen one of those movies, and then I got used to it. It's not really bad.
It seems like something that would be...
Distracting?
No, I was going to say, it seems like something that would be cool for the first minute, but then you just quickly get used to it.
Yeah.
Kind of like IMAX.
Yeah. It's kind of like, it really is just like playing a video game. It's like, okay, a little bit of movement, I get it.
Yeah. I remember the first time I played a video game on N64, the Rumble Pack, and it was like at someone else's house, and I just was playing, and then my thing started rumbling, and I was like, what's going on?
I broke it.
And then, yeah, and they were like, oh, it's a Rumble Pack, and I was like, we are in the future.
But that was, you actually had to buy a pack and put it on.
Yeah, you attached it.
Now all of them just have it in.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Our phones have basically Rumble Packs in them.
That's true, too, yeah. Boy, we live in the future, don't we? So, what else is in the news? Louis C.K.
Oh, boy.
Louis C.K. reemerged again.
You know, I feel like...
Tell me.
He should have... You know, like, he obviously did absolutely horrible and horrendous and heinous, terrible things. Right. But I at least had a little bit of respect for the fact that he said publicly, I'm going to shut up for a while and just listen.
Right.
But then I feel like 3 weeks later, he was back doing shows.
And
it's
he
he didn't wait or go away at all, ever.
And... He seems to
be so angry, like he's the victim.
Yeah, he seems to see himself as a victim.
Like, did you read
like,
when he was
like, he doesn't get it?
He was like, have you ever had a bad year where 365 days in a row are bad? That's what I've been through. It's like, well, you've masturbated in front of women.
Right. No, all right. So let
who didn't ask
exactly
for it.
So, or let me set this up. He, did a set somewhere and somebody recorded it, and that's kind of not cool because people do this all the time and comedians are trying to work stuff out, and you shouldn't, you know, surreptitiously use your phone to record a comedian.
Right, but when you're at that fame level, you should expect it, kind of, I think.
Well, I'm just saying, I'm just prefacing with that.
Well, yeah,
but
I agree.
What he said wasn't cool, and but also let me admit this. I didn't listen to it. I only read a transcript.
No, I haven't either.
And that's because I knew that it would bother me, and I wasn't in the mood to be bothered. So I do know. Look, I know a lot about comedy. You know what I mean? I've listened to almost every episode of Mark Maron when it was good. You know, I know that there's a difference between reading a comedian's transcript and hearing him.
Of course.
And I know, and I used to love Louis, so I saw Louis's old stuff a lot, and I know that he would say shocking things on purpose. There was a satire there. But what you've got in this new set, it's not like when he had that old joke about, like, oh, you should be able to kill kids and just put them in bags and throw them away. Like, the stuff he says, well, first of all, the big thing that came out was he made fun of the Parkland kids, the kids who survived the shooting at their school. This is a quote from him. I don't know. They testify in front of Congress, these kids? I mean, what the fuck? What are you doing? You're young. You should be crazy. You should be unhinged. They're in suits saying, I'm here to tell you. Fuck you. You're not interesting because you went to a high school where kids got shot. Why does that mean I have to listen to you? You don't get shot. You pushed some fat kid in the way, and now I got to listen to you talking? So that doesn't sound like he would say short little things that you know would be to make you react, and then he would laugh afterwards. This is a whole long diatribe.
Also, I feel like you could hear a little bit of his old stuff in there, in like the way it's said,
yeah,
like the way it's set up. But it does feel much like it's coming from a darker, much angrier place, because it's just like, now he's just another one of these people who's critical of the Parkland survivors.
Well,
you know,
this is the larger story, which I'm interested in, which is some people are beginning to question, is his move now to become like a right-wing comic?
Probably.
Is he going to do like the Dennis Miller thing, where since liberals are the ones who, by and large, turned on him, even though they were the ones who championed him?
Right.
Is he just going to go around to red states that don't give a shit about making women watch you jerk off?
I could totally see that, because...
because there's a bunch of... in this one 50-minute set, a lot of... he, you know, there's more than that. He also makes fun of transgendered people.
Yeah.
And he, so it's just like... it's not just one instance of a very sort of alt-righty concept. It seems like the whole set is built for that audience.
And he also said something really dark. I saw, again, I didn't hear it, I only read it, but did you see when he was like, what do I care, my life is over?
Yeah.
And it's like, I could see him being the type of guy to be like, well, you know, the liberal media ruined my life, so now I'm yeah, really, really gonna lean the
he
other
said,
way.
What more can you take from me? My birthday, I've got nothing.
Yeah, which sounds so dark.
It's super dark, but it showed, but it also shows like he was lying when he said, I'm gonna shut up and listen. He clearly feels like he's a victim. And by the way, I always thought his apology was lame anyway, because he made it like, I didn't know yeah, that I was, they yeah, said it was okay. To me, the best apology of the Me Too era was Dan Harmon said, this is what I did, this is what I did it, I was sad and pathetic, and there's nothing right about it. And he was, to me, the perfect example of like, don't defend yourself. Don't
right,
do, just be sorry.
Just own it and be sorry.
Right. Where Louis C.K. was like, I don't understand. And
also,
now,
there are different, you know, like anything else, it's nuanced. I'm not familiar with the Dan Harmon thing, but...
one of the writers at Community, he like thought he was in love with. So in his head, he was like, I love you, blah, blah, blah. And he kind of just made work hell for her. And eventually she like quit because she couldn't take his constant like being up her ass.
Right, which is something that like I've seen men do to women.
Right,
in the
right.
Workplace.
She made in his, and he even said in his apology, like, in my stupid head, I thought like I'm the protagonist of my story and
right,
I love her. But really, she was a person who wasn't interested and I just made her job hell.
Right.
But that's, to me, I'm not saying he's right and that he's awesome.
No.
Obviously, Dan Harmon has a lot of crazy shit. You know, he's an irascible alcoholic.
Yeah.
But at least he didn't say like, oh, I didn't know it was wrong.
Or that I don't recall thing.
Oh, well, that's the lamest.
That's the worst. Like, if you either say, yes, I'm wrong, I own it, or do the other thing where you say, this is absolutely not true, however, I support women speaking out.
Right.
Which some people say is also bad. But, you know, if that's your story and you're sticking to it, at least you're saying, okay, but I still support the movement. To do that thing, like, I mean, really, it's kind of not in the same vein, but like the Kevin Spacey thing.
Oh, the Let's
Be
Frank?
Where it's like, yeah. And
that was very weird.
Well, no, I'm talking about his original apology.
Oh, when he tried
like,
to turn it into a coming out
yeah,
story?
Yeah, but even before that, when he was like, yes, and then he was like, and I mean, some drunken behavior from 30 years ago, forgive me if I don't remember that. It's like, don't do that.
Yeah.
You're talking about a 14-year-old kid.
You know what was a really sleazy and heartbreaking reaction to that? Reaction to... an allegation is Juno Diaz wrote an article about how he had been abused, and everyone was like, oh wow, he was abused. And then like a week later it came out that he had abused somebody, and then he was like, you know, it's a cycle. And it's like, you fucking creep, you knew that this was coming and you sort of headed off at the pass and got in front of it and made us feel sympathy for you when you were just setting up your apology. That was pretty creepy, too.
It's interesting to see, though, who's going to get away with it, so to speak, and who isn't. Like, I feel like people will be forgiving of Juno Diaz.
people, I feel, well, some of it was such a big, huge wave that some people are just literally forgotten. Like, I feel like no one remembers George Takei from Star Trek.
Oh, yeah.
He was accused of, like, basically a similar thing to what Kevin Spacey did.
Yeah.
And
I think he was one of the ones, though, that said that absolutely isn't true.
Right. And he just was quiet and it went away.
Yeah.
You know who? Did you hear the last one was Neil deGrasse Tyson, the astrophysicist?
Yes, I did hear that.
A bunch of scientists were like, yeah, when I was his grad student or when I was...
Oh, God. It's tough.
Oh, but Louis is so weird. His thing is, it's weird because it's like, he seemed to have an MO of it. It seemed to be a thing that he did.
He's trying to get his career back up off the ground, I think.
Well, now that's what he's trying to do.
I feel like he's going to pitch this as like a new FX series or something.
This is another quote from him from that set. They tell you what to call them. You should address them as they, them, because I identify as gender neutral. Oh, okay. You should address me as there because I identify as a location. And the location is your mother's cunt. Now, I'm not going to be upset about the cunt thing. I could hear the old Louis just trying to rile you up by saying your mother's cunt. But the I identify as location, that's so lame.
Yeah.
That's such an out of... And again, going from let's make fun of the Parkland teens to now let's make fun of transgender people. Well, then later on he starts talking about how we should still be able to say retarded. It's like you're hitting all the fucking alt-right boxes.
It seems like he came out trying out some new material and it seems like all that's been going on in his comedy notebook is like... I'm going to take on every controversial issue and I'm going to be on the other side.
Right. Because these are the people. He also said something I thought.
Because it's not like he's just being recorded talking. Like, this is his material.
Yeah. I'm trying to find this other quote because he said some other really self-pitying quote where he was like,
well, he's always
I lost this many millions of dollars in a day.
Yeah. I saw that.
Can you imagine losing that much money in one day? I did. And it's like, well, yeah. Because you fucking harass somebody, you fucking loser. Like again, it's like, oh, poor you. You lost millions of dollars.
He's always been that kind of like self-deprecating schlub kind of guy.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work quite as well when you're talking about how you're a multimillionaire.
Right. Your everyman status is way gone. Yeah. Well, let's shift into Trailer Corner. We watched three trailers for today.
Yes.
We watched a trailer to Us, the new Jordan Peele film, the trailer for the new TBS sitcom Miracle Workers, and the teaser trailer to the Netflix season 3 of Stranger Things. All right, so let's start with Us. What did you think of the trailer to Us?
I think it looks really good. All right, here's my hot take.
Hot take.
I feel like I was just going to say there should be a sound effect for this.
Hot take
alert. I feel like it's going to... I feel like it looks good and it probably will be good, but I'm afraid that it's going to be that typical sophomore slump thing of like the thing that you made that kind of came out of left field was amazing. Now we're giving you a ton more money and we're giving you a ton more creative freedom.
Yeah, just do whatever you want.
And sometimes, especially on a second go around, there are mistakes are made. There.
Right. This could be his Unbreakable.
Right. Like, I'm afraid that it's... And the thing is, it's kind of... Not that that's fair to him, but it will... Or not that this is fair to him, but it will always be compared to Get Out. And he's also made it very clear that, like, Get Out is now the first in, like, a series of films that are about similar themes.
And I bet that was not his life plan.
No. And then
his life plan was I would imagine that his life plan was, oh, I want to go and do this little project where I make a scary movie, but then I'm going to go back to being a comedian.
Right, but it blew up.
Became huge, and now he's a horror film director.
Right, and now he's associated with the new Twilight Zone, too, right?
Right, so it's this whole other crazy trajectory, and...
I wonder what Key thinks about all this.
You know, I still love
You gotta Keegan. Wonder.
Michael Key. You know, he's in a new season of Friends from College.
That's the same.
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same thing.
The same as winning an Oscar.
Well, what's funny is the same year that Get Out came out, Keanu came out. That was their first attempt at, like, this is a Key and Peele movie.
Right.
And that didn't really do well, and Get Out did. Yeah. And now I don't think there's going to be any more Key and Peele movies.
The thing that was cool about Get Out was that it also paved the way, I think, for this whole thing, which we've talked about before, of, like, for some reason, people who are really funny are also really good at horror, it seems. And then I think that there wouldn't have been a new Halloween movie written by a comedian if it weren't for Get Out being created by a comedian. And I think that there are going to be other comics playing their hand at horror.
I'd be interested in seeing that.
Yeah. Louis C.K. is working on it right now.
Yeah. So the film seems to be about a African-American family, middle-class African-American family, who's going to a sort of beach community to spend the summer. They have white friends, Tim Heidecker, and which is, he's the perfect play. He's always the perfect guy to cast as, like, the corny white friend. Tim from Tim and Eric. And
Elizabeth Moss.
Yes.
Who says, it's vodka o'clock.
Yeah, which is such a great, like, mom thing to say. And they're a family of five, father, mother. The father is, I forget his name, but he's M'Baku from
Black Panther.
Black Panther. And then Lupita Nyong'o, who also was a Black Panther, and Star Wars, and of course, 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah.
They're the mother and father. And then there's three kids?
No, there are two kids.
Two kids.
There's another little girl in the trailer.
Oh, right.
That fans think is Lupita as a young kid.
Right. Did you watch those videos that are break it apart?
Yeah.
Yeah, like that might be her young.
In the 80s.
Yeah. Okay. And the boy, whenever we see the boy in the regular family, he wears, like, he's got, like, a mask.
Yeah.
But, like, the scary version of the boy. Well, actually, I don't know if I said it. They're doppelgangers. So, it's the four people in the family. They look like they're being stalked and abused, kind of like The Strangers or Funny Games.
Right.
But the four people are them. They're all in red jumpsuits.
Yeah.
They all look like weirder versions of them. Yeah. They all have...
And they have masks that they take off and reveal that they are their doppelgangers.
And they all in their right hand have fingerless driving gloves.
Yeah, it's very
weird. And they seem to have scissors, seems to be a theme in
it.
Yes. So it's this psychological thriller. It seems, there seems to be a visual theme of bunnies in it.
Even the scissors look like bunnies.
Yeah,
like a bunny,
yeah.
The scissors look like a bunny head.
Yeah, I saw a cool video that was like scissors or like...
The duality of scissors. Yeah, I think we watched the same video.
Yeah, and they also pointed out that bunnies were one of the first animals to be cloned.
Yes.
So, is it going to be as good as Get Out? I could probably say now,
no,
it's not going to be. Especially because not only was Get Out great, it was a shot of lightning in a clear blue sky. It was like out of nowhere. Like, nobody saw this coming. Nobody thought it was going to be this good. And it should have hit at this perfect sort of moment. And, you know,
this is the follow up to Get Out. And
right, exactly.
As good as it is, or probably is, it's always going to be the follow up to Get Out. And people are, the audience is going in with that expectation now.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I'm excited about it. I'll definitely see it on the big screen. But it, you're right. It remains to be seen, like, you know, how it will be. But I am interested in, you know, it's interesting that he sees it as a 4-part movie instead of like a trilogy. And I wonder if each one will be a different theme. Like, what's the theme of this one? Because he says that he wants them to be social, you know, what he calls like social horror movies.
Right.
Which isn't really, they talk about it like as a genre, but it's not really. It's basically Ira Levin and Jordan Peele.
What do you mean by that?
Like, they go like, oh, this is a, you know, whenever Jordan Peele talked about Get Out, he's like, you know, this is in the same genre as like
Rosemary's
Stepford
Baby.
Wives and Rosemary's Baby. It's like, but
those
all
are
one
both
dude.
The same author, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's
that's
like not really a genre. I'm not trying to take anything away from Jordan Peele.
No,
I'm just saying,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's interesting. I mean, the fact that it's an African-American family. I mean, he's an African-American director. Get Out was about, you know, so much of its horror was about
race.
The fears of being African American, and I don't know if that is what the new one will be about.
I was wondering that too. I don't know if the fact that they're an African American family is at the center of Us.
Or he's just like, you know what, there needs to be more black people in movies, so there's right, just this family's black. Which is
absolutely correct and fine.
Right.
So I was wondering the same thing. It doesn't seem... It seems like it's more about doppelgangers and doubles and body horror, like, in that way.
It does seem like he's got a lot of money, and it seems, he was allowed to do whatever he wanted. It seems like a bigger
movie.
So
Get Out is... Yeah, Get Out's a pretty small movie.
Yeah. If Get Out had more money, it wouldn't have all been in that one house.
No, right.
You know what I mean? Exactly. Like, you can tell smaller movies, they have to work harder. Oh, by the way, speaking of Get Out, did you see the name of the production company is called Monkey Paw Productions?
And it's Stirring the Cup of Tea.
It's Stirring the Tea. Yeah. It's a Monkey Paw Stirring the
Tea. I wonder if he's going to do that thing where, like, they're all kind of in the same universe. Like, somebody from Get Out will be mentioned or show up later on.
That'd be crazy. I don't know. I'm excited about it. All right, let's talk about the trailer to Miracle Workers. This is a new series based on the works of Simon Rich. Simon Rich is a short story comedian. He was also a writer for SNL. And what Simon Rich is known for is his high concepts. Like, he had a show already based on his works called Man Seeks Woman, which is based on a short story called The Last Girlfriend on Earth, where this guy he meets every single woman on Earth to see if they want to date him, and none of them do. And then there's another story where he goes to an ex's party and she's dating Adolf Hitler, and he's like, I don't like this guy, and everyone's like, whoa, like, let her move on. Like, it's all high. It's all like super high concept. One of my favorite stories from him is written from the point of view of a gerbil who lives in a kindergarten, and like that he writes in this, like, it's this harrowing tale of, like, you know, every week a different kid takes care of me, and next week will be the kid that's shitty, and I'm afraid that my children will not eat, and I will die, and then and his name is Princess Jasmine. So that's his kind of stuff, and this is another TV series based on a high concept, which is what
I feel like it's like what I was getting from it was like heaven. The recliner's going again.
Oh God.
Like heaven as a boring office place,
right,
kind of thing,
right? And the main characters are in the mailroom. But really, it's answer prayers.
They answer prayers, yeah. So I thought of it as like kind of like looking like The Office meets like a high concept.
Right.
Like, I don't know, Heaven Can Wait or something like
right.
that.
Right. And God is played by Steve Buscemi.
And he says, doesn't he say in the trailer, he says something that I've heard him say before, like a...
Oh, he...
Like Hachimachi or something like that.
Hoochie Mama.
Yeah,
he turns on a bunch of TVs and you hear about like global warming and all this violence, and he goes Hoochie Mama, and then he drinks a beer. He's supposed to be like a god at the end of his rope, because at the end of the trailer, he's like, "I've decided to destroy Earth."
Yeah, and, it looks funny. Yeah, it does look funny. I was surprised to see Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah, Daniel Radcliffe is the main character.
Some star power, and then I saw TBS, and I thought, "Is this a step up for TBS, or is this a step down for Daniel Radcliffe?"
You know, Daniel Radcliffe, he's just doing his thing. He's made some really interesting choices. He did that movie based on the Joe Hill book.
Yeah. I mean, he's set.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see the daughter from Cock Blockers.
I love her. She's great. Yeah. She's good in everything. Yeah. If you like really funny sort of terse short stories that like genuinely make you laugh. Like, he does have this one little novella that I liked, which was about a guy who was like a pickle farmer or something. He made pickles in like a century ago, and he fell in a vat of pickle juice and he got pickled, and now he was sort of brought back to life in the 21st century, and he goes to live with his hipster great grandson, and he comes from this war torn world where he doesn't understand the artisanal world of his grandson, and then eventually he starts like making pickles again, but now he's getting famous because they like these handmade pickles, and like I think they're in like Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and it's shit like
very
that.
Very high concept.
Yeah, that's Simon Rich. So I'm excited for another Simon Rich show.
I feel like every TBS comedy, from what I haven't watched many of them, but I know they've tried so many times in the past, and I just feel like I always hear that they're always like just nearly funny.
Yeah.
Like they almost got it. So maybe this time the recipe is correct.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully. And the last trailer was just a teaser trailer for Stranger Things season 3. It was released.
Oh, boy.
Yes. Feelings, thoughts,
reactions? Full disclosure, I didn't watch season 2.
Okay. Season 2 is better than season 1.
I never finished season 1.
In my opinion.
Either.
All right. Well, look, we're not so at odds here because I think Stranger Things is a solid 6.5, 7 on a good episode.
We've talked about before that Paper Girls is a better, or at least the first volume of Paper Girls
Brian
is a better
K. Vaughan's
Stranger
Paper
Things.
Paper Girls is a better version. Yeah, I think that it does rely too much on nostalgia and
pastiche,
80s bullshit.
Pastiche.
Yeah, it's good. It's not great. People treat it like it's the greatest show that ever was created. And it's not.
So the trailer doesn't show much.
Yeah.
But it does.
It's a cool trailer, though.
It is a cool trailer. And I thought the trailer to season 2 was cool, too. I didn't think I don't know. Maybe I'm just not invested. I don't know. I did enjoy season 1, but I never got around to finishing it. And that alone speaks for itself.
Right. That
there was no impetus to, like, I got to figure this out. I was just kind of like, I don't care.
Right. Exactly.
But I did enjoy what I watched. It's one of those, you know, it's like one of those shows that if it were on TV.
Yeah.
Maybe I'd keep up with it because it's like, oh, once a week. Okay. Let's see what's going on here. But for a binge.
Right,
I feel like
exactly.
It's got to be really, really. It's got to hook me.
Yeah, right. No, you're right. Yeah, I mean, it's such a. It's not just pastiche. It's like, montage or it's like collage. It's basically like, all right, Chief Brody from Jaws, he meets Firestarter from the Stephen King book Firestarter, but Firestarter is also kind of like E.T. because she lives with these kids,
right.
And they're also the Goonies. And then his older sister Nancy is obviously Nancy from A Nightmare from Nightmare on Elm Street. It's just like every 80s movie literally sewn together.
I'm just so sick of everything being set in the 80s. It's just like, it's like we went through that period in the 80s where everything was set in the 50s.
Yeah.
And now we're here and everything is set in the 80s.
But
and
so
I'm
many
just
people
so
who love this stuff
sick
is
sick of it.
A lot of people who love this stuff are not people our age, but younger people that weren't in the 80s at all.
I feel like
so they just think of it as a certain, like the way we probably think of the 50s.
Yeah. I also sometimes feel like it's a little bit of a narrative cheat because I think sometimes people lean into the unnecessary 80s setting so that they don't have to deal with social media and iPhones and stuff.
Oh, for sure.
Because it's just modern enough that it can be relatable.
Although, I know, I think with Stranger Things, I'm going to say no for Stranger Things because in that show, the kids use walkie-talkies like cell phones and it's ridiculous. Like, they'll be in different buildings miles away and, like, take out a walkie-talkie and talk to each other. And it's like, all right, this is stupid.
What I would like to see, and I actually thought was going to happen in this trailer, but then I was just, I guess, being stupid for a second. So, you know, at the end of the trailer, it's the time jumps to, it says coming 2019.
Yeah.
I thought that was like, for a second, I was like, oh, is this show doing a time jump?
Wouldn't that be crazy? Like,
yes. I'd like for it to be like, okay, we're opening up and it's 1996.
It is supposed to be, I think, a little bit after. I don't know. Well, we haven't said yet. The teaser trailer is, it's an old, it was released on New Year's Eve, and it's an old clip of Dick Clark in 1985 when the show takes place.
Yeah.
Counting down to the new year, and
which was an apple at the time for those brief few years when it was an apple instead of a ball.
And that footage is sort of keeps getting disrupted by some transmission that looks like sort of green text on a screen,
something
to do with the right. And then you hear when they say 11, 10, you know, 11, 10, you hear the kid from season 2 say 11. And
I
then,
didn't pick up on that.
Yeah. And then it says Stranger Things 3. I kind of like that they call it, that they make it like it's a movie. Like,
yeah,
two,
that's cool.
Three, yeah. I'm invested. I want to see.
I feel like they got nothing. This teaser is all they got so far.
Yeah.
They got nothing.
They also put out a teaser a while ago, which was like the mall. It was like a fake commercial for the mall in their town. They're at the place now where it's kind of like the new Toy Story trailers, where it's just like big dick trailers. Like, whatever, you're gonna watch our thing. We're gonna fucking do whatever we want.
That's the funny thing, because similar to Get Out, I feel like Stranger Things season 1 kind of came out of nowhere, and then everyone all of a sudden was like, have you watched Stranger Things?
Yeah.
And now we're at the point where it's just such a big phenomenon that now it's like they can They've got all the money. They've got all the resources. Right. They can tease the shit out of it a year in advance.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
People from it have gone on to make movies.
Yeah, they're all over the... these kids are all in commercials everywhere.
Yeah, the cop is now Hellboy.
Yeah, yeah. It's,
you know, she's in the new King Kong. No, she's the new Godzilla.
Who? Oh, the girl, 11. Yeah, yeah, what about Winona?
I love Winona.
This hasn't really...
It hasn't
done much for her career. Her.
I know. Look, I'm still hoping. I still hope against hopes that Beetlejuice in Hawaii will get made. Written by the Wayans brothers.
On hope for Heathers too.
Well, hold your breath. All right, so let's take a break. We'll be right back with the chill sesh.
Halt. Mean Gene, what are you doing? You're supposed to meet me out front. It's 5 a.m, man.
Halt, come on. It's 5:00 a.m. Where are we going to go at this hour?
That's exactly what we said. The workouts start 5:00. What are you doing with that smoke boiling in my face? My God, what is this, Gino?
Well, Hulk, I'm getting ready for breakfast here. I'm going to have some pancakes, a couple of eggs, some bacon. Before I work out, I was just having a cigar.
Hey, we're going to start out on the right foot. Get that coffee out of your mouth. We're going to start out on the right foot. I'll make you breakfast. Just stay right there. Now, Mean Gene, just listen to me. Forget the cigars, the coffee, the bacon and eggs, and especially those blueberry pancakes. Get me a couple glasses wherever they're at.
Be more than
just get
happy
me a couple
to.
Glasses, and I'll make you breakfast right now, Gino.
What do you got in mind here, Hulk?
Oh, I got something that'll keep you going all day long, Daddy. Don't worry about a thing, brother. Just don't worry about it.
You have got to be kidding me.
No carbs, no fat, nothing but pure protein, bro. You know, this is the eye of the Hulkster, man. You got to get your head right.
Hulk, not raw eggs. Oh, that's come on.
This is the only way to go, Mean Gene. You're in strict training. We gotta watch your diet. We gotta make sure you don't get overloaded with all those carbohydrates, and especially that nasty cigar I saw you smoking, Mean Gene.
Boy, gonna, I don't...
Look, the best protein you can get, we're gonna do this 4 times a day. Just watch me, Mean Gene. Just watch how easy it goes down, and then you're next, brother. This is how we start the day. Every morning and every 2 hours, we do the same thing.
Oh, no, Hulk, I couldn't.
There's not a better way to go. Come on, Mean Gene. You're already late. I was here at 5 a.m, man. You're sitting there sucking on a cigar and drinking that coffee. Get your head right, man. You made a promise to me and all the people around the Twin Cities and Upper Wisconsin area. So get it together, man. Let's do it.
Well, I'll tell you, Hulk, I'm afraid. I saw you just woof it down. I'm afraid I'd lose it. Now, I've made a commitment to you. I've made a commitment to the people of the Twin Cities.
Well, the thing is, hold on. If you're going to lose it, if you can't handle it, you got to run a couple miles right now. But as soon as the sun comes up.
A couple miles.
That's right.
Before the sun's even up?
That's right, Mean Gene. I don't want you to lose it out there, Daddy, because we're just getting started. I'll take care of business. When we get back, I'll make a couple more shakes for you, okay?
Oh, my.
Let's do it, man. You ready?
I'm ready. Let's go.
All right.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Man Show and PC. MC.
That's what the kids call it.
That's right. That's what the kids on the street call it. As John Malkovich would say, PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined once again by Anthony Bongiorno. So this is the chill sesh. Chill sesh.
I noticed you do that.
So the chill sesh... Is I'm gonna be more chill in my chair.
You could hit that recliner, Daddy.
No.
Lean all the way back.
I don't. That's a game I don't play. So what have you been chilling with? What have you been reading, watching, playing, doing?
All right. So I just got back from my Christmas break. So over that break, I read a really, really good book.
What book?
It's a YA joint.
What's it called?
Called The Poet X by Elizabeth Acevedo.
What's it about?
It is written entirely in verse, and it's
okay.
The diary of a teenage girl in Harlem who is an aspiring poet but is very shy and introverted, and her parents, especially her mother... are a little bit abusive, and it basically just through her writing it tells a story of this girl who's a sophomore.
I don't know if I know what verse means.
It's written as poetry. The whole thing.
Oh, okay. All right. So that's, that is what I thought.
Yeah. So basically, it just tells the story of her kind of coming out of her shell, and she joins her school's slam poetry club, and then she goes to an open mic and performs for the first time. And it tells a small but really powerful story about this girl, and it's really, really well done. It was a really, it was one of those books. You know, it's like the best books that are the ones that you pick up and you're just like, oh, I know I'm hooked and I'm not going to put this down and I'm going to read this in a day. And that's exactly what it was. And it's won a bunch of awards, and I'll actually lend it to you because I think you'll really like it too. Mm-hmm. So it's called The Poet X.
The Poet X.
Yes.
That sounds good. Yeah, I love the, you know, it's the experience of like, I don't know, maybe it takes 10 pages in before you're like, this is going to be a good book.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You kind of know is going to be good, bad, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I actually read a really good book too, but I'm going to save that for my obsession.
Okay. I've also been reading this book that you got me for Christmas.
What book is that?
Because I expressly asked you to get it for me.
Yes.
Which is Dictionary Stories, Short Fictions and Other Findings by Jez Burrows.
What is that?
It is a collection of micro stories put together that were put together by this guy, Jez Burrows, and they are all made up of and consisting entirely of example sentences from dictionaries.
All right, give me an example.
And I've kind of got like a dictionary fetish, so I'm really into this. So like, all right, here's an example. I found there was a good one before.
I need you to explain what you mean by a dictionary fetish.
I'm just really into dictionaries, and I'm really interested in the way that they are made. And I, last time I was on the show, I talked about Word by Word by Corey Stamper, who's a lexicographer for Merriam-Webster. Mm-hmm. I'm really into them, and I just think they're really cool, and I just nerd out over them, and I think something like this is really cool. All right, so here's one.
Okay.
And these are all example sentences from dictionaries, various. These are actually all from the New Oxford American Dictionary. So this is written almost, this is written in the form of a poem. Depression. Public speaking for the unemployed, biblical quotations for the unemployed, meditative techniques and astral navigation for the unemployed, straight brandy, personal hygiene, social confidence for the newly single, damn it to hell, heavenly father, alcohol abuse and ecumenical dialogue, the hidden dangers of bright-eyed optimism, feline leukemia and fecal incontinence, enter Hamlet, exit Pamela, sexual apartheid and the plays of Shakespeare. So it's this is pretty random. But then there are other ones that are written more like.
Wait, I don't think narrative. I understand. How is the entire little story is? What is he making up? Is he making up anything?
That
or
one
is
was
it
more
all
of a poem, but he's not. He's not adding. So in the beginning, there's a little introduction where he tells about his process, and all he's doing is adding punctuation and or conjunctions to combine the sentences.
Okay.
So it's all. It's like found literature.
Okay.
So this
it's a little bit like William S. Burroughs.
Yeah. So this is okay. This one is like more narrative. It's called Date Night of the Living Dead. They sat looking at each other without speaking. And so I should say, like, for example, in that first sentence, without is underlined because that's the example sentence for without.
Okay.
They sat looking at each other without speaking. What's the matter? Me? Oh, I'm fine. She took a sip of the red wine and looked around desperately. Like hell, he thought. He paused for a moment, as if marshaling his thoughts. Well, I just checked my watch and it's definitely 1 o'clock. He laughed at his own pleasantry. She stifled the desire to turn and flee. There was a strained silence. All she could hear was the pounding of her heart, the clinking of glasses. Feeling the blush mount in her cheeks, she looked down quickly. I never seem to say the right thing, do I? He put the question with deceptive casualness. She swallowed a mouthful slowly. This wine is really drinking beautifully. Oh, for God's sake, snarled Dyson. I sometimes wonder whether you really and truly love me. I shit you not. What am I doing wrong? She paused at a loss for words. The door opened softly, and the living dead slowly ambled forward with one leg dragging behind. Ginny glanced at her watch.
Wait, where does I shit you not come from?
So that is a definition. That's a, where is it? Shit. So one of the example sentences for a definition of shit
would be,
was I shit you not.
Okay.
In each one of these sentences, a word is underlined because that's the word where the example sentence was found.
I think I'm finally getting it. It's interesting though.
It's hard to like to explain without showing you. But you know, which is perfect for a podcast.
As you were reading it, though, I was trying to guess which word the sentence. Like, I was trying to be like, what is the word that sticks out here? Is this is an example of how to use that word? Yeah,
sometimes it's not the one you'd think.
It's underlined when you read it, but when you read it to me, I was like, oh, I bet that's the word that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really interesting. I think this is a fascinating fandom that I don't know anything about.
Like found literature in general?
No, just this whole thing. Like, not found literature, like the dictionary thing and the words thing. You're like a word nerd.
I am a word nerd.
Like, what? Articulate that for me.
I'm just fascinated by language in general. And obviously, you know, I'm an English person. I love to read. I'm an English teacher. I love to write. I'm a writer. And it's, I don't know what it is. It's something about vocabulary and grammar and spelling. I'm just one of those weird people that has always really been into it.
Even spelling?
Since a kid.
I've never had much use for spelling. I pride myself
on my spelling acumen. Although spelling is not a sign of intelligence. Like, people are just good spellers or they're not.
Well, is it?
So it's almost, it's nearly impossible. The research
shows. Is it based on memory or based on
that it's nearly impossible to teach spelling?
It's so you just have to memorize.
You just have to memorize, yeah.
There's no.
And also, most people who say they can't spell can spell. They spell 98% of their words correctly. They just misspell a minority of words that are longer or whatever. I don't know why some people are better spellers than others, but it's just one of those things. You have a knack for it or you don't. Like grammar. Like, I'm just a grammar person. I love it.
Yeah.
Even though I know most people find it so boring and tedious.
Well, when you think of grammar, you think dissecting sentences. I think when people think grammar, they probably don't think about, you know, what you think about. They probably just think about, like, grade school and being forced to given rules or something as a child.
Yeah, and the rules are frustrating because every rule has an exception.
Right, and it's a style and a craft.
Right, but I'm not a prescriptivist. I understand that the language follows. That the grammar and the dictionary follow the language, not vice versa. So nobody came down from on high and said, like, this is how you write a sentence.
Right,
made that up.
And that would be, so a prescriptivist is somebody. A
prescriptivist is the person, like the stereotypical teacher who like wags their finger and says like, speak properly. You're a
descriptivist.
I am, descriptivist.
Right, you think that the dictionary should exist. There were words that we use and the dictionary's job should be to catalog those words.
Catalog and document those words.
Not to prescribe what the words ought to be.
Correct. So this is kind of ties into that other book I was talking about that was written by that lexicographer.
Lexicographer, she's my favorite porn star.
Oh boy.
This is the kind of high grade comedy you get.
The show.
This is the kind of high grade comedy
you get on
PCMC.
But anyway, not to bore our listeners.
No, it's not boring at all.
But as Corey Stamper wrote in her book as well, the dictionary is there to catalog language, as you said, and certain people, she writes in her book, write angry letters to Merriam-Webster, for example, saying, you know, like, I can't believe you put the definition, I can't believe you altered the definition of marriage. That was such a political move on your part.
Mm.
And her response, as someone who's not a prescriptivist, is the word's meaning has changed, so we must update it in the dictionary.
What do you think about something like literally? Literally has changed because we use to be its exact opposite.
Right. Well, in most dictionaries, one of the definitions of literally will be, an exaggeration or used to exaggerate.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, some people get so upset about that. And, why are you saying literally when you don't mean it? You mean the exact opposite.
But people use that.
Exactly. If it's widely used, then that's its meaning now.
Yeah. But the problem,
or one of its meanings.
Right. The people who are angry aren't angry necessarily that people are using it that way. They're angry that the dictionary is allowing it. That the dictionary is, you know, they should somehow be, you know, the policeman of the words and not allow. And you think that that's wrong.
Correct, because if you find, first of all, dictionaries are relatively new in the grand scheme of history. Okay. And if you were to find one from even 50 years ago, you would open it up and half of it would be out of date.
Right.
You know, so, and there would be tons of, I mean, you think about it, like we invent new nouns all the time and new verbs.
Right.
So,
right.
For example, like friend was always a noun. And then all of a sudden social media came along and now you can friend someone and now it's a verb too.
Right.
So the dictionary has to document that because we're all using that as a verb.
Right. Twerk is in the dictionary.
Is in the dictionary. Yeah, every year.
Because it's a word we use, so right. Why it belongs in there.
Every year you read these articles of these people whining about, oh, I can't believe they put this word in the dictionary. And it's like, where do you, we made up all of these words. Where do you think right. The words came from?
How can we have a word that people say and use? And it's funny, what you're talking about is very similar to the way that I think about media and the way I think about cinema when I teach. You know, there are people that are scholars of very niche, particular things in the media and in cinema, you know. And I'm all for those people doing their work, whatever. But my thing has always been sort of like popular culture. I'd much rather do a podcast like this podcast than write an academic article about Get Out. Okay?
Right.
And I think an academic article about Get Out is good and it should be there. But my problem with critics, especially like academic critics, is that it's almost prescriptive. It's almost like...
It's an exclusive club.
And it's, I think, sometimes I think the intelligentsia or academia, they think that culture can trickle down. Like
yeah.
The way conservatives believe in trickle-down economics, I think sometimes academics or academic critics believe in trickle-down culture. You know, if I write a 20-page journal paper on Einstein on the beach, then this 7-hour opera will become more popular. And it's like, no, I'm not saying there's no value in it, but it's not going to have the effect that I think. You know, some critics use the cringeworthy phrase tastemaker.
Yeah.
And I think you're not a tastemaker.
No.
And I'm not a tastemaker. PCMC's not tastemaking. It's just, this is what's around. These are the
right.
Video games and movies, and I want to talk about them. You
right.
Know what I mean?
You know, it also reminds me of, like, this whole other issue. You know, as an English teacher, the canon, the literary canon that I'm working with is very small and not very representative. And yet, there are those people who feel like, if you want to teach kids about literature, you got to put the classics in their hands and that's it.
Right.
Nothing contemporary, nothing that is
going to make them love reading.
Exactly. Right.
You're going to make them think that reading is a chore.
Right.
And something that you don't want to do.
Right. So it's the same idea. You know, like or somehow we're making them smarter this way.
Right. Right. I saw Into the Spider-Verse twice and I just finished playing PS4's new Spider-Man game. And I've been thinking about the narrative of Peter Parker. And I bet more people could describe to you Peter Parker's life than, I don't know, Ethan Frome.
Right.
You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Absolutely.
Not to say that it's not worse, but I'm interested in what people are interested in.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I've never... And I'm not saying... I'm speaking in generalities. I know a lot of academics that do care about popular culture and write about popular culture. But there's a certain strain of critic that can turn their back on something wildly popular and say, I don't care to know anything about this. You know, like,
right.
All right, for instance, I know people who teach film that have never seen a Transformers movie. Now, I don't like the Transformers movies, but I've seen them because there's 9 of them and they're out there and they
right.
make money. You know, I will put my eyes on something, even if I don't necessarily like it, because it's like, it's there. What am I going to not...
Yeah.
If I am a practitioner in, you know, of thinking about and talking about these things, how can I say, well, I'm not into superhero movies? You know what
Absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely. Well, yeah, it reminds me of, like, when I was in grad school, I had a professor who said something negative about Twilight, and then... But then she quickly said... And by the way, I've read all of them. And somebody was like, oh, you read those? And she was like, well, yeah, how could I criticize it if I've never read it?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's true. You know, a lot of people read those books. And if you're a professor of literature,
right,
and your whole life and your whole career revolves around what people are reading, how can you say, oh, this is a cultural phenomenon, but I'm too good to read that?
Because to me, it's like, you know, it's the sociological part of it that's so interesting. You know what I mean? Like, okay, people complain there's too many superhero movies, and there are, you know, but in 40 years, if we're still a country, we'll look back and we'll go, what was going on? And we'll go, I don't know, 9/11 happened, and then for the next 20 years, Americans were obsessed with superheroes. And
stuff like that is much clearer in hindsight.
Exactly. So it's like, rather than going, oh, it's all trash, you know, why are we obsessed with these things? You know, I watched a good 15 minutes of the first episode of Riverdale, and I feel like, you know, I forced myself to watch those 15 minutes, and I hated every second of it, but at least I can say I watched 15 minutes.
Right,
at least, and I'm not just making fun of it because women like it, or making fun of it because people of color like it, or kids like it. Because that's the thing, when people are like, oh, that's... That's the thing with Twilight. I don't think Twilight's good books. I only read about one chapter of the first one. But a lot of the hate against it is because it's something that appealed mostly to young women.
Right.
And, you know, if it's for young men, it's cool. It could, you know, Christopher Nolan's Batman movies can be considered great American stories. But, you know, Twilight, we have to shit on.
It reminds me of like 300 years ago when the literary elite were all men and they were all like, you're reading a novel. Novels are for housewives.
Right.
You know, like they seem so silly now. Or that seems so silly now, and so do they. And it's that same kind of thinking.
Yeah.
But anyway, we went down a rabbit hole here.
No, it's good. Did you see Green Book? I saw Green Book.
I did not. I wanted to.
It was okay.
All right.
It was good. It's one of those movies that its heart's in the right place. It's trying to say something positive about race and how we should think about race. But it's problematic in just some of the ways that it presents itself, like, and it doesn't know that it's problematic.
Like The Butler or The Help, or there's so many of those.
Blindside. The movie,
which I can acknowledge that The Blindside is problematic, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
you know, and Sandra Bullock was really good in it.
Yeah, I liked Green Book. It's based on a true story of this sort of wise guy, kind of good fella. Guy who was he was not in the mob, but he was a mob adjacent. He officially was a bouncer at the Copacabana, but he was, you know, related to all that mob stuff. And the Copacabana was getting redone, so he had like 2 months without work. So he gets hooked up to be the personal chauffeur and guard of this African-American artist
who was a real person
who was this great like one of the best pianists ever, and so you've got this very talented, very wealthy, very intellectual African-American, and he's being chauffeured around by this white guy who's sort of like, he's got this Brooklyn accent and all this shit. But first, when you watch it, you're like, well, the movie starts from the white guy's perspective, and it's like, it should probably be from the other guy's perspective. Like, right off the bat, that's one of the real weird things that the movie does.
Well, so many movies and books and everything that are about race, they still are told through white
points of view. Right. Isn't, like, The Blind Side, like, about Sandy Bullock?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's not really your story. I love To
Kill a Mockingbird, but that's... You know,
right?
That's,
exactly.
That's some have said it's a race novel, but I mean, every protagonist in that book is white.
Yeah. Another problem I had was that the African American character, whose name is Dr. Don Shirley, who was a real person, he's played by Mahershala Ali from, you know, he was Cottonmouth in, you don't watch fucking Marvel shows. He's a great actor. And
wasn't he in Moonlight?
Yeah, that too.
That's so.
He's Juan in Moonlight.
Yeah. I like that your go-to reference, though, was who's Cottonmouth in that Marvel show.
He's great in it. And Viggo Mortensen is Tony Lip, which he's an interesting choice because it feels like he's a very, like, there should have been, I don't know, like Joe Pesci. But
yeah,
they get this guy, you get Viggo Mortensen, and he gains weight and he puts on this, you know, Italian accent. But Don Shirley was gay. And the movie only, like, once deals with it.
Yeah.
That's... Because the movie clearly was like, we're going to deal with race and nothing else. But this guy was gay, so let's, like, mention it.
Yeah.
But, like, not make it
intersectionality.
Yeah, it's very ignored. Weird. And they even have Viggo Mortensen's character, who was a real person, like, not care that he's gay at all. Like, the characters had problems getting used to being the chauffeur for an African-American. Like, it's about his journey being less racist. Yet he's totally cool with his gayness.
They just didn't want
to
go through that.
He says to him, hey, you know, I my whole life I work in nightclubs. So, like that's his reason. Like, so I know, you know, so even God though it's the 60s, him. I'm totally fine with homosexuality. Although I just had to learn to be nice to black people. And not call them eggplants.
That's like that movie that just came out, Mary Queen of Scots, which I didn't see.
Neither did I.
But I heard that there's a trans character in it who's her brother. And he says to her, like, oh, is it wrong that I really want to be your sister? And that she, like, grabs him by the face and says, like, when we're together, you can be whoever you want. And it's like, that's so anachronistic. Like,
yeah,
as great as that is so not
dear
the
brother,
reaction.
That, you know, if I'm woke.
Yes, exactly.
I woketh. Yeah, it's because if they didn't have a scene in Green Book, people would have been like, well, he was gay and you didn't mention it at all. Right. So it's like, we got to mention it and then not deal with it at all. Yeah. It's almost like, when movies do this, it's like they don't want to deal with the complexity of it. But anyway, it was okay. Actually, I just watched a really cool documentary on Netflix called Struggle, the Life and Lost Art of Suchowski. This was this guy who was a Polish, he was a sculptor, and he was like super well known in Poland. Like, he did national monuments, and he was wrote about in the paper, and nobody remembers him anymore. He's like an artist that's completely forgotten in time. And he had a resurgence, or at least he was sort of rediscovered in the 70s in America, when like all these young like comic book artists and like outsider artists like found him and like gave him this sort of second relevance. But it's really interesting because before World War II, he was kind of an anti-Semite, and they didn't know that. So like it's one of those, like a lot of good contemporary documentaries, it goes one way and then there's a turn.
Yeah.
One of the people that discovered him was what's his name? Leonardo DiCaprio's father, who's an artist. Like there's pictures of
for a second I was like, you mean Leonardo da Vinci, obviously.
Yes. Yes, exactly. No,
I didn't know Leonardo DiCaprio's father was an artist.
Yeah, Leonardo DiCaprio was actually one of the producers of this movie. There's even a picture of Leonardo DiCaprio as a little kid sitting on this artist's lap.
Huh.
George DiCaprio. He was a comic book artist, his father.
No, I did not know that.
So George DiCaprio was one of this group of comic artists who like rediscovered this Polish artist. But after the anti-Semitism came out, he like turned his back on him, even though he's still interviewed in the movie. But then after the war, he became much more libertarian. But then he got into this crazy thing where he thought that all of life came from Easter Island. It's a crazy documentary about a really interesting artist that like you've probably not heard of.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool.
It actually made me think, I don't know any sculptors. Other than like Da Vinci,
with art. I don't know anything about.
I'm not great with art either.
Movements.
But I could name a painter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but I realized like I don't know one sculptor.
I feel like a lot of them did both, didn't they? Like David.
Yeah, right. But like there are people right now who will like if you want a statue made in your town hall, they're the guy to go to. And I have no fucking idea
unsung
who these people
heroes.
Are. Yes. I mentioned it before. I've been playing Spider-Man for PS4. God damn, that is a fun game.
I haven't played a video game in a few years. Not since the Nintendo Wii U.
I thought you had a Switch.
No, I don't.
Ah.
I've played a Switch. Some of my students have like brought them to school, and I've played The thing about me is, I really love Super Mario, and I have a Super Mario tattoo, yeah. And like I have Super Mario stuff all over my classroom. So my students always think that I'm a gamer, and I'm actually right. not. I'm just really into Super Mario and side scrollers only.
Yeah, yeah.
And even like I'm really, really bad at like Super Smash Brothers and yeah, all of those games. Too. Anything that requires like multiple movements of the fingers and multiple buttons and this doodad and that, I'm just terrible at. So the kids are always like, oh, play me. Oh, he's going to school you guys. And I always die in 4 seconds. I'm like, oh, you know, I'm off my game today because I don't want to own up to the fact that like I'm really bad at playing video games.
And then those kids drop out of school disenfranchised. Yeah. Like, you know what? Mr. Buongiorno's a fucking phony. Fuck the system. And then they go become greasers.
So Spider-Man for PS4.
Yeah. It's not tied into any movie or anything. It's just an adaptation of Spider-Man as a video game.
Mr. Spider-Man.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. Like I was saying when I was talking to Nadia, when I first started playing PS4, I was scared that I was going to be too bad at it. Like I wasn't mm-hmm. going to be able to learn. Because you're right. Like
I'm sure you adapt to it.
They've advanced. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've gotten used to all the buttons.
That's good. I mean, that's cool.
Yeah. I think I'm going to slow down because I just got the PS4 and I've already played 3 games. I already beat the story of 3 games. And I can smell how addictive it is. Like yeah. I can already sense like... Because, like, I'll be playing Spider-Man, and then, like, hours will have gone by, and yeah. I'm like, oh, wow. Like
you have a full beard.
Yeah. The dog is a skeleton of a dog. Oh, it's boy. That. My kids have graduated college. Yeah. All right. Let's take a break, and we'll come back with obsessions.
Muskrat, candlelight, doing the town and doing it right in the evening. It's pretty pleasing. Muskrat Susie, Muskrat Sam, do the jitterbug out in Muskrat land and they shimmy. Sam is so skinny, and he whirl and he twirl and he tangle, singing and jangling a jangle, floating like the heavens above. Looks like muskrat love.
And we're back. This is PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno, Pop Culture Man Children. Follow me on Instagram at Pop Culture Man Children. My grid isn't great. I know y'all are into grids these days. But mostly, what do you get on my Instagram? A lot of toys, a lot of fun stuff like that. It's a good nerd Instagram.
Yeah, it is.
If you're into that kind of stuff, let's talk about obsessions. Obsessions. So, I'll go first. I'm obsessed with a YA book that I just read.
Okay.
It's called Emergency Contact. It's by Mary H.K. Chow, who actually, she's like a journalist. This is her first novel. She's like writes like columns and she's written for Vice and stuff. And I read a lot of YA. And my favorite YA author is probably Rainbow Rowell. Just because when I read her stuff, it feels... real. I hate the word real because it doesn't mean anything. You know, when a student says, oh, it was realistic, I always make them question what that means.
Right.
But when it comes to YA, the thing about YA is melodrama for the most part. And melodrama, it gets a lot of criticism because it's typically written for women, but also because it's thought of as being manipulative. Which, for some reason, no one feels that way about comedy or horror, which are just right. as manipulative. But some YA, you can see the DNA, you could see where it's going. Like, I loved The Hate U Give.
Yeah,
but, like,
too.
As I read it, I was like, I know what she's doing, I know where she's going, I know what's going to come back, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some YAs where you feel like this feels like genuine human interaction.
Well, the thing with YA is that it's a lot of melodrama, but teenagers, there's an urgency to their drama.
Right.
that Rainbow captures very well.
Right.
Because they literally don't have the perspective to understand that this relationship that they're in is not going to last.
It's not,
you know,
yeah.
And is not, this is not the love of their life or whatever. So she captures that urgency and that
But she doesn't manufacture fake urgency.
Right. It does feel real, and it feels like, you know, this is their lifeblood. This is what they live on, and it feels not condescending.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I'm 35, so I haven't been a teenager.
Yeah, I mean,
or in my early 20s in a long time. But just as a reader, there'll be, you know, you'll read a book and then there'll be some note that strikes you as off.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't necessarily mean you're not into the book anymore, or that you're going to put it down, or that it's bad. But
it's like you see the writer's hand.
Exactly.
Yeah.
With a really good YA, you don't ever feel that. And that's the way I felt about Emergency Contact. It's about, it does the YA thing that it's very typical for YA love stories, where each chapter is written from the perspective of,
yeah, alternating both points of view.
Yeah. So Penny is a college freshman. She doesn't know her dad. Her mom is very embarrassing, and she has a sort of like relationship with her mother where she's kind of more the mother to her mother.
Mm-hmm.
And she's not very outgoing and friendly, and she's very sort of like antisocial.
Okay.
And then the dude in the book, he's like 23, so he's older, and he's like a loser. He lives and works in a bakery. And he's got tattoos all over his body, and not that that makes him a loser, but like, mm-hmm. he dropped out of school and he's got a drinking problem, and they meet because her new roommate is his niece, because through marriage they're really the same age, but through marriage, okay. She calls him uncle, whatever. Mm-hmm. Oh, Stan. She calls him Uncle Stan. So they meet through the girl, and then Stan has a panic attack and he passes out, and he just comes by Penny, and Penny saves him. And they're like, let's be emergency contacts.
Oh, that's,
and a lot cute. Of the book is them texting one another.
I love that.
Yeah, and one thing I really liked about the book was, one, it's very cute and it's very fun and funny and it rings true. But another thing I really liked about the book was it doesn't do that obvious thing that so many books do where they make like social media bad, or mm-hmm. they say social media is somehow the downfall of a generation.
Yeah.
Texting is presented in the book as positive and good.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like that it doesn't have this bullshit, because I hate that bullshit. Oh, you millennials, blah, 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 blah. Like, them texting, you know, it just feels like they're pen pals. Like, it doesn't have any of, it doesn't feel at all like the book is looking down on them for texting.
Yeah.
And I like that about it. I just thought it was really good. The characters were good. Penny, at one point she actually has a line, I'm not a manic pixie dream girl, because she's not.
Mm-hmm.
It's written by a woman.
Yeah.
Which I think is why the female character is so well-rounded. I really liked it. I think if you like Rainbow Rowell's work, you'd like this. I read a lot of YA, and a lot is better, or I should say a lot is worse.
Yeah.
But this was like a really good one, and it was that experience where I kind of knew nothing about it. I just like read a synopsis. I was just looking for a new book to read.
Those are always the best.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I was just like, all right, I need a new book to read.
Yeah.
And I'm just like looking through Amazon or something, or I'm looking through Goodreads, and I read a synopsis, and you never know. Like, it could be, you know, the synopsis never really tells you what the book will feel like.
Right.
And it just was good. It was. I read it very quickly. It was 400 pages, which is about 50 pages longer than I want a novel to be.
I hate long books.
A novel, to me, the sweet spot is 350.
I would go even shorter. I feel like 300.
Well, this book was 400, but it didn't feel that way at all.
Yeah.
I read it in like two sittings. It was like a clip. It was like boom. And to me,
so a lot of blank space on the page, like when they're texting.
No, not really. No, it just goes. It just moves.
That's good.
You know, it's just like, you know, I've thought about this a lot. You probably know more about this than I do. Like, I've thought about, like, what makes a read faster or a read better? You know, what kind of language just makes you move the page, mm-hmm. you know, turn the page more? But I read it so quickly. It didn't feel like 400 pages
at
all.
That's awesome.
Whereas we've all read books where like you feel every goddamn page, and you're like, you feel like you've been reading it for a month, and then it's like you're on page 90, and you're like, oh god.
I'm looking at you, Jane Eyre. Hot take. Hate that book.
I've never read it.
Ugh, don't. It's bad. No, it's you heard it here, classic. Folks.
Professor of English Anthony Buongiorno says, don't read Jane Eyre. Quote, it's bad.
It took me what felt like 7 years to slog through that book.
I feel you. So that's my obsession. What are you obsessed with?
Mine is not nearly as interesting as that. What I'm obsessed with is, speaking of Instagram, so it started off as slime videos.
I'm sorry, what?
Videos of people playing with and making slime.
Oh, okay, okay, yeah.
I don't know how I stumbled upon this.
Sometimes you
this
just
dark,
fall into
dark world.
Sometimes you just fall into a YouTube rabbit hole.
Yeah. So that's what it was, and it's, I just find them soothing, and I hate this. Everybody on the internet calls everything like oddly satisfying, but yeah, that's really what it is. So then that led to videos of
sand,
sand. Yes.
Yeah, the sand things.
Videos of people
and
like
slicing them?
Sand.
Oh yeah.
Which then led to videos of people shaving soap and cutting up soap, which, ooh, I really enjoy watching.
That is interesting.
And, you know, it's like one of those things where I'm like, I'm laying in bed and I'm going to sleep, and it like lulls me to sleep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then that led me to, it's all these like super short videos.
Yeah, yeah.
Videos of baking, which I don't bake, and I'm not really a huge fan of pastries or anything, but they're just so inventive and so pretty looking.
And no, when you say baking, you see
like a really fast motion video of like a whole recipe being made and like cupcakes being put together in the into the form of a bunny or something.
And do you see the baking actually happen?
You see it in like super fast time, like literally 2 seconds. You'll see it rise in the oven.
Okay,
and then it's like I particularly love that whenever they put in these videos, whenever they put icing on something, they always scoop it with an ice cream scooper.
Yeah.
And then smooth it out.
Nice.
With a knife.
Nice. Just,
something about these videos is it really is soothing, and I'm really addicted.
No, that's fantastic. For a while.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. For a while, I was very into hydraulic press videos.
Oh, those two I've been watching.
And they're all really short, and they're all like, what happens when we put a bowling ball in it?
Yeah, because
like,
you know why?
You just want to see it.
I feel like these are the things that I used to think about before the internet allowed me to see it.
Yeah, like what kind of pressure could pop a fucking bowling ball?
Or like there's also videos of like cars just running over things.
Yeah,
and what
yeah.
happens, like what happens when a Coke bottle is run over by an SUV?
What about those... What about those videos that are industrial, they're like industrial strength, like shredders?
Yeah,
but like they
yeah,
can
yeah.
shred like cars and couches.
Yes.
And like they'll just be like, we're going to throw a couch in it. And you see it like eat the couch. And then some of them do it in reverse. So you see it come back
out.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's such gratification.
I just feel like it's a dark path, though, because I feel like I'm eventually, it's going to lead me down to videos where it's just like, what would it be like to cut someone up into little pieces? Oh man, it's oddly satisfying.
I mean, sure, yeah. No, that sounds like a really good like horror short story.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Right. Just a YouTuber who like he begins by taking things apart, and then like eventually he starts like taking apart
and
living
then gets
things.
A bunch of followers.
Yeah,
we gotta.
You know, I'm gonna cut this out. This is gold. We can't give this out for free.
Yeah. So that's because I don't really like animal videos, which everybody seems to like.
What about unboxing videos?
I'm not into them. I find them creepy.
It makes me feel like a capitalist pig.
Yeah.
Because the joy is looking at a box and what does it look like to open it?
Yeah.
It's like if I bought it, but yeah. I didn't.
I know. Kids like those.
Yeah. Because
you think about it, like kids love opening up toys. So.
And so do I, though.
Yeah. I'm also not into anything where somebody's eating. That to me just seems so so disturbing. Like those mukbang videos or...
Oh, what about
like where it's like girls eating and they're like, oh, I'm so full. I don't know if I can eat anymore. I'm like, what? I don't businessman is jacking off to this?
What about like Emilio was really into that guy who like does food challenges? Like,
yeah, I'm going to eat a giant pizza. That's disgusting. But I would love to watch a video about like how they make a giant pizza. You know, like what if we made a gigantic pancake?
Do you ever see, well, there's a documentary about that.
God it's called bless.
Uncle Buck.
Oh, yeah. You know, you got me.
What does he say? You should have seen John the what? Candy.
You should have seen the, oh, I don't know. What does he say?
I couldn't even get it through the door.
The French toast or something?
Oh, maybe. I always thought about where to get that huge butter. Because he's got a huge butter that he puts on there.
God, that's a weird movie.
Yeah. But that's my favorite John Hughes movie. Well, Anthony, by God, I think we did it.
We're done.
I think
I'm disgusted and I'm done with this.
Thank you for being on. Thank you at home for listening. This is PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. With me today is Anthony Bongiorno. Yo. You'll be back in a couple months.
I'm sure I'll be back.
You can listen to us anywhere podcasts are available. Hey, do me a favor and go on iTunes and rate and review. Give me a 4-star or 5-star. Write a nice review. And hey, if you like the show, why don't you share us with a friend?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
A little R&R and then a little L&S.
Absolutely.
Listen and subscribe.
And I was way too taken back by those letters you just threw at me.
Rate and review.
Rate and review.
Like and subscribe.
When you said R&R, I thought relaxation. Right.
Yeah, well, that was the pun.
Oh, okay.
A little R&R.
All right.
With PCMC.
Thank you. Go bye-bye.
Go bye-bye.